Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. We have been following one of its most important fronts at the moment with intensity, and will continue to do so in the course of this program. I'm delighted to say with our leadoff batter being Robert Springborg. He is a professor of national security affairs at the Naval Postgraduate School, a man deeply knowledgeable about Egypt and particularly its military, which is very much in the news at the moment. Dr. Springborg, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us, sir.
Thank you for having me.
You were quoted in a piece that I saw at the Huffington Post recently, talking about the man who runs the Egyptian military these days, a general by the name of al-Sisi. Tell us a bit about his background and how the selection of this general by Morsi may have contributed to what we're seeing play out at the moment.
Well, General al-Sisi rose through the ranks of the army. He was partially trained in Britain, and then he had a short course at the Army War College in Carlisle Barracks, Pennsylvania. He became head of military intelligence, having previously served as defense attaché in Saudi Arabia. And what is notable about General al-Sisi, I suppose, are two things. First, that he had caught the attention of American military officers who work with the Egyptian military. He was a name that was being mentioned as a possible successor going back 3 years before Mubarak fell, about the time I first started hearing his name. But in addition to that, he's someone who stood out as openly professing Islamist views, someone who was not ever, insofar as all the reports I've had, been associated directly with the Muslim Brotherhood, but whose views were not dissimilar to theirs. And so both from, in a, if you will, the American side and from the Brotherhood side, he was seen as someone who, a man to be reckoned with, as it were. When the SCAF, the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, replaced Mubarak back in February 2011, immediately General al-Sisi, who was on the SCAF at that time, became the go-to man for the brothers in their negotiations with the SCAF. And over time, because it was Morsi, later to become president, who was leading the negotiations for the Brotherhood, who struck up a relationship with al-Sisi, it was that connection that then led to al-Sisi being appointed as Minister of Defense in August of 2012. And indeed, it was that relationship, I think, that prevented the military from moving faster against the brothers because Morsi and al-Sisi really had worked with one another. They did want to work with one another. But in the end, al-Sisi was fearful that the military would not only turn on the brothers, but possibly turn on him if he continued to subordinate himself in the military to the brothers. And so the break finally occurred then in July.
So give us, if you would, then, Doctor, a sense of how the Brotherhood or the Islamists, at least, are exercising influence inside the military these days. Obviously, this is a gentleman who has been imbued, as you say, with those sort of leanings. Is he representative of the generations that are going to be filling the senior positions in the future? And does the military really, therefore, for at least the foreseeable future, look to be an uncertain influence when it comes to trying to provide a check on the Brotherhood?
Islamism as a political ideology began to emerge in the wake of the June 1967 war. It took a while for it to become a sort of way of thinking among a subset of officers, but by the 1980s, it had become such. It was very common by that time for officers' wives to be muhajabat, not wearing the niqab, the complete face covering, but the partial the partial veil or just the hair covering, signifying traditional Islamic values. Whereas before, in the 1960s, you'd never see an officer's wife as someone who was manifesting a commitment to Islam in any particular way. So Sisi is, within a trend that's long established now within the Egyptian officer corps. But what is also the case is that the Brotherhood was banned from entry into the military. So known brothers were not allowed to have their sons go on to the military academy and hence rise into the ranks of the officers. That has now changed. General Assisi presided over that change to admission policy not long after he became Minister of Defense. There are presumably now some young brother-associated types who are at the military academy. But it's a very long stretch indeed to say that this general sort of amorphous Islamism, which is a common trend of thought among officers as well as among millions of Egyptians, is going to pave the way for brotherhood influence in the military. The military is very sensitive about any sort of penetration by any group, and especially the brothers. And so I think Islamism as a thought system has to be clearly differentiated from membership in the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a hierarchical, indeed, as we now see quite clearly, anti-democratic organization.
Yeah. Our guest again is Robert Springborg. He is a professor of national security affairs at the Naval Postgraduate School. Among his recent publications is The Middle East's Democracy Gap, Causes and Consequences. Dr. Springborg, let me ask you specifically about the state of play at the moment with the military having, it appears, shot a number of Muslim Brotherhood adherents in what, again, remains to be confirmed, but appears to be cold blood. Does this suggest that there will be more such bloodshed in the future, that the military will, despite al-Sisi's predilections and some of the changes that he's perpetrated under the Morsi government, find the military standing up to and against the Brotherhood and the Islamists, whether he wants to or not?
I don't think there was a break in the chain of command. I don't know what happened, but the military has stood against an awful lot in Egypt and not had insurrections within its ranks or non-commissioned officers, for example, taking matters into their own hands. And I doubt that's what happened this time. I suppose from the distance of California to Cairo, one just wildly speculates. But my wild speculation is that a certain amount of panic set in. I don't think this was a cold-blooded thing. I think this speaks of panic. It's perfectly clear that the military did not want to provoke the Brotherhood. And the last thing that they wanted was any sort of a massacre of Brotherhood supporters. But most probably, former President Morsi is being held in the Republican Guard barracks. And those charged with protecting them really didn't have the sort of normal crowd control, either training or equipment, which members of the Central Security Force, for example, which is under the Ministry of Interior, have. So the military really has nothing but military equipment. And left with that, and left with the apparent attack on their position by these members of the Brotherhood, I think these soldiers simply shot at everybody they could shoot at. And so this bespeaks of the lack of capacity of the military to deal with crowds. And this is a huge weakness now for the military, that it really has no way of controlling any crowds that are gathered against it. The Ministry of Interior forces are highly unreliable now. And so I don't think the military wants to provoke, but because one incident happened, it reveals the weakness of the military in terms of dealing with large numbers of people. And if they're pressured, they could break down again in this way.
Needless to say, the pressures and the likelihood for further circumstances that induce panic, and as you say, the limitations on the capacity of the military to serve as a sort of crowd control apparatus, despite what I understood was something on the order of 140,000 rounds of tear gas that the U.S. government supplied the Morsi regime in recent days is all evidence of a problem that is going to continue to fester, I fear, for some time. I hope we can come back to you, Dr. Springborg, for your assessment of what's going on inside the Egyptian military and what it might mean for the future both of that country and the region more broadly. Thank you very much for your time, sir, and for joining us. Next up, Claire Lopez will join us. We'll get her take on what's happening with the Brotherhood in Egypt and the region beyond. Straight ahead.
To know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.